Good afternoon and welcome to Iris. This is Trevor Brass bringing you the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, November 22nd. Let's take a look at our five-day forecast for the Siouxland area. Today we can expect increasing amounts of sunshine with winds about 8 to 60 miles per hour and a high of 48. Tonight we can expect the weather to be clear with winds just 3 to 6 miles per hour and a low of 24 degrees. On Monday, it'll be clouds and sun, breezy in the afternoon, winds about 10 to 20 miles per hour, a high of 44 and a low of 38. On Tuesday, it'll have the occasional rain and drizzle, high of 46, low of 28. Wednesday, clouds and sunshine with a high of 46 and a low of 28. And finally, on Thursday, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 49 and a low of 26 degrees. Let's take a look at our front page story today, and it's titled Coronavirus in Education. Headline, Pandemic Forces Changes to Fall College Schedules. Subheadline, with COVID-19 spread high, some Siouxland schools finish early. Back when there was a substantial rise in the number of Morningside College students who tested positive for the novel coronavirus 1 month after the school year began, there was uncertainty on what direction the fall semester would take. Morningside students Colin Andrick and Cassidy Hart said students saw the September case statistics and took more ownership of their activities, both on campus in buildings and dorms, plus socially. Quote, people saw the numbers and said, oh my gosh, we need to wear masks more and do the distancing, Hart said. Adnick said there was a sense of accountability on campus with people realizing, quote, we all have one job to do, which was to get through the semester safely. Hart compared that to how people outside the city campus approached the virus in terms of precautions. Quote, it is sad to see the rest of the world isn't taking it so seriously. On Friday, nearly 204,000 Iowans had tested positive for the coronavirus this year, while the number of positive cases in Woodbury County moved above 9,600. In Iowa over the past month, the 14-day average number of new cases has quadrupled, the number of daily hospitalizations has tripled, and the 14-day average of new deaths has doubled. Iowans over the last 6 days have debated a series of additional virus-related requirements placed by Governor Kim Reynolds on business and other entities, including a partial mask mandate. Students will wrap their semesters sooner than normal at Morningside College, the University of South Dakota, and Dort University, since administrators wanted to reduce the impact of coronavirus spread on thousands of students and college employees. The earliest to wrap up after 4 days of final tests are completed by Wednesday include three Iowa Regent schools, Iowa State University, the University of Iowa, and the University of Northern Iowa. To pull off the early end, Morningside, which an undergraduate with an undergraduate enrollment of 1,175, started the semester 1 week earlier than normal and is instructed on four Tuesdays that otherwise were not planned days of classes. Adnick, a native of Waterville, Minnesota, and Hart, who is from Omaha, both mentioned the mental stress of monitoring daily virus numbers and trying to learn for their futures amid the compacted semester. Quote, it always felt like it was crunch time, always a task at hand, Adnick said. Morningside has an online dashboard site that shares key details of the college virus plan, plus relays the number of weekly positive tests for students and staff received through Morningside Student Health. There have been almost 170 positive tests of students for the semester, with the last 3 weeks of September being the high point, when there was a combined 98 positive tests of students, including a high week of 46 positives during the week of September 14th through the 20th. During those final 3 weeks of September, a combined 224 Morningside students or staff were quarantining off-campus, and 144 quarantined on-campus. The Morningside positive virus case numbers dropped after that, with no weeks in October or November having even double-digit numbers of positive cases for either staff or college students. Briarcliff officials, who, like Morningside, oversee a private college, have refused to release any specific numbers of virus cases among the enrolled 1,076 students, although they cited Friday that numbers, quote, remain quite low. Western Iowa Tech Community College in Sioux City has had a traditional semester with an upcoming Thanksgiving break. Then classes will be done on December 22nd. Western Iowa Tech Community College joined Morningside and Briarcliff University, so all three city colleges had a mask-wearing requirement, and hand sanitizer was nearly omnipresent. Briarcliff has a semester that isn't shortened, but after the traditional Thanksgiving break, most courses shift to completely online instruction through the semester end of December 18th, although some experiential learning, such as clinicals, will still have in-person elements. Briarcliff embarked on an intensive fall semester scheduling approach that has many courses condensed to 4 weeks at a time. That sort of block scheduling served to reduce in-person class sizes and the potential for virus spread for both students and faculty, BCU spokeswoman Susie Fisher said. Quote, we would consider this a successful year and are proud of what our friends and employees have accomplished, particularly during such an uncertain and challenging time. When this academic year began, we knew it wouldn't look like any other in history, and we planned accordingly, Fisher said. Morningside's last day of courses will be Tuesday. The dorms close the day before Thanksgiving, and students will take the semester tests online from their homes from November 30th through December 3rd. Quote, I'm excited to be done in a week and finish the test virtually, student Hart said. Thinking back how the 3 months of classes have gone, Morningside President John Renders said he expected there would be substantial virus spread since there is no vaccine expected until 2021 and people have, quote, COVID fatigue and want to get back to a normal way of living. Quote, we have done very, very well. I think our community has responded. I commended the students, Renders said. For the most of the University of South Dakota academic programs, classroom instruction concludes by Thanksgiving. Instead of returning to campus after Thanksgiving recess, students will complete their final exams remotely on December 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 7th, and 8th, when the semester ends. USD is located in Clay County, where there have been 1,198 positive coronavirus cases and 9 deaths through Friday. USD officials are also thinking ahead to the days of presumed continuing high virus cases, so they launched the, quote, Know Before You Go campaign, encouraging students to get tested for COVID-19 prior to the winter break. With funding from the South Dakota Department of Health, USD is offering free virus testing to students, faculty, and staff through the USD Sentinel testing program. Quote, we understand that students want to spend the holidays with their families, and we want them to be as safe as possible when they do so, said Tim Ridgway, Vice President for Health Affairs and Dean of the Sanford School of Medicine, said in a press release last week. Quote, getting tested prior to the winter break is an important step students can take to assess their health and make more informed decisions about their holiday plans. Returning to the front page again, the next headline is Care Facilities Face Shortages. Subheadline, Staff, Equipment Hard to Come By Amid Pandemic, from Des Moines. Long-term care facilities were among the hardest hit during COVID-19's first surge of the pandemic this summer. Now, with the virus spreading through Iowa, those facilities are once again bearing the brunt of the pandemic. So severe has the situation become that the state public health department has given its blessing, as a last resort in emergency situations, for long-term care workers with a confirmed COVID-19 infection to provide care to patients without the virus. As of Friday night, there were COVID-19 outbreaks, defined as 3 or more confirmed cases in a facility, at more than a fourth of Iowa's roughly 440 long-term care facilities, and nearly 1,000 Iowans had died at long-term care facilities. As of Friday night, there were COVID outbreaks, defined as 3 or more confirmed cases, more than a fourth of Iowa's roughly 440 long-term care facilities, and nearly 1,000 Iowans had died at long-term care facilities. And many nursing homes throughout the state say they are facing critical shortages of available workers and personal protective equipment that protects those workers from the virus, like gloves, protective eyewear, gowns, and medical-grade face masks. As of mid-October, 38% of Iowa nursing homes reported having less than a 1 week supply of personal protective equipment, or PPE, and 43% of state nursing homes reported being short on staff, according to survey responses nursing homes send periodically to the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. While long-term care facilities across the country have been hit hard by COVID, Iowa is higher than the national average for nursing home residential cases and deaths per capita, and nursing home staff cases per capita, according to federal data compiled by the AARP. The state is also worse than the national average in the percentage of nursing homes that say they are short on staff and personal protective equipment for that staff. Quote, it is serious, said Dr. D. Findlay, executive director of Iowa Caregivers, a nonprofit that works to address shortages among direct care workers like certified nurse aides and home care aides. Quote, the people who work in these jobs, the nurse aides, social distancing isn't really an option. You can't give somebody a bath or assist somebody to the toilet or help them with oral hygiene from 6 feet apart. Because of that, those workers are a little higher risk for contracting and spreading the virus. Quote, so they live in fear. They love their jobs, but they still live and work in fear now. Findlay said direct care workers have been working in difficult conditions for years before the pandemic hit in March. She said the positions are high turnover and low paying. She said the median salary for a direct care worker in Iowa is $13.80 per hour. Quote, they're putting their lives on the line for $13.80 per hour, Findlay said. Things were not good before, so you can imagine now, in the midst of a pandemic, how challenging it is for those folks on the front line and their employers. Anthony Carroll, advocacy director for the Iowa chapter of the AARP, said 38% of nursing homes with less than a one-week supply of PPE is, quote, troublingly high, particularly at the pandemic's eight-month point. Quote, we're halfway through November, and that is troubling, Carroll said. The state has a PPE stockpile, and Governor Kim Reynolds this week urged nursing homes facing shortages to request equipment from the stockpile. Reynolds' spokesman later clarified that a facility must be dealing with an outbreak before it can request PPE from the state stockpile. The spokesman said facilities that are not experiencing an outbreak may be considered eligible to receive PPE from the state stockpile, but those will be evaluated on a case-by-case basis. Carroll said the state should do what it can to make it easier for facilities to get the PPE that they need. Quote, Iowa should streamline this process to make it easier to get the PPE in the hands of long-term care facility staff and residents, Carroll said. For the sake of residents, family, and staff, Iowa needs to do whatever it takes to ensure that we no longer have over 38% of Iowa nursing homes reporting that they don't have a one-week supply of PPE. Reynolds this week also announced that she is dedicating $14 million in federal funding designated for COVID-19 response efforts to help long-term care facilities with staffing and testing. When asked if the funding can also be used to purchase PPE, Reynolds referred to the state stockpile. Reynolds also noted her office and the state public health department have worked on guidance for long-term care staffing. One of the new guidelines, published in the State Public Health Department's November update, says workers with a confirmed COVID-19 infection may provide direct care to patients with a suspected infection, and, quote, as a last resort emergency staffing situations, workers with a confirmed COVID-19 infection may provide direct care to patients without an infection. Reynolds also said this week she expects to announce an initiative next week to recruit more nurses and other critical healthcare workers to come to Iowa to help bolster the state's strained workforce. The governor's spokesman said a plan to bring more healthcare resources to Iowa is being developed, but details will not be available until next week. Quote, like our hospitals, it's important that we provide assistance to long-term care facilities at this time, that every Iowan continues to do their part to protect the most vulnerable of our healthcare workforce, Reynolds said. Carroll and Findlay both suggested Reynolds should consider deploying the Iowa National Guard to help with Iowa's overwhelmed healthcare workers, and both proposed a state registry for direct care workers, which could be used by employers to more easily find workers when faced with staffing shortages. Legislation to create a direct care worker registry was proposed during the 2020 session of the Iowa legislature and was being considered before the pandemic hit and then derailed the legislative session. Findlay said she would like to see some of the federal pandemic response funding to be put towards hazard pay and other financial issues like increased child care needs for direct care workers. Quote, you hear a lot about doctors and nurses, and they are very, very important, but let's not forget that these people, i.e. direct care workers, Findlay said, they're on the front lines and they are an important piece of our ability to mitigate and fight this virus, and they need our support too. All right, returning back to the front page one last time, let's read the mini editorial, which comes courtesy of Bill Stewart of Sioux City. And Bill writes, "Finally, total agreement. We can finally agree on something!" Exclamation point. Thanks to his foresight in developing Operation Warp Speed 2 and possibly more vaccines are showing incredible progress in their ability to fight the monster known as COVID. A further feather in Mr. Trump's cap, as correctly reported in 60 Minutes, is the astounding distribution chain already created by the Trump administration posed for widespread dissemination. FDA approval is the final link in the chain to attacking this hideous foe. Thank you, Mr. President. We are all forever grateful. Signed, Bill Stewart of Sioux City. All right, let's turn to the inside pages of the Sioux City Journal today, looking at page A2 and look at the briefs story today. First headline, tickets on sale for a holiday event. Light up your holidays as actors Chevy Chase and Beverly D'Angelo discuss their favorite moments and answer fan questions regarding National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation during a special interactive event. Quote, "A virtual Christmas with the Griswolds, an evening with Chevy Chase and Beverly D'Angelo, will happen at 7 p.m. Saturday. Tickets for a device and a chance to be part of the show are on sale at TysonCenter.com. A limited number of VIP tickets, which include a post-show meet-and-greet with Chase and D'Angelo. An original member of NBC's Saturday Night Live, Chase is best known for such movies as Caddyshack, Three Amigos, as well as the National Lampoon's Vacation franchise. D'Angelo has appeared in more than 60 movies, as well as such TV series as Law & Order SVU and Entourage." Next headline, police identify man killed in wreck. Police on Friday identified Chad Mannion, 45, of Sioux City, as the person who was killed in a single vehicle rollover one day earlier. Mannion died after the pickup truck he was driving struck a light pole and rolled over on Sioux City's west side Thursday afternoon. The crash happened in the 3600 block of West 19th Street. According to a statement from the Sioux City Police Department, Mannion, who was the lone occupant of the vehicle, died at the scene of injuries resulting from the crash. The collision remains under investigation. Next headline, teens charged in Sioux City burglary. The Sioux City Police Department has arrested two teenage suspects in a November 15th burglary at a Sioux City home. At around 4:09 a.m. on November 15th, Sioux City police officers responded to a burglary which had already occurred. The victim told officers he was threatened at gunpoint by two males wearing masks. The suspect threatened the victim and fled with some of his personal property. On Friday, the Sioux City Police Department located the suspects, who have not been named because of their age. A 16-year-old male was arrested and charged with first-degree burglary and first-degree robbery. A second 16-year-old male was arrested and charged with first-degree burglary, first-degree robbery, going armed with intent, and assault while participating in a felony. Next is Paulina Mann, 26, dies in Cherokee County crash Friday. A Paulina, Iowa man died Friday night after crashing a vehicle while being pursued by a Cherokee County Sheriff's deputy. Matthew James Williams, 26, of Paulina, was driving a white 2005 Ford Mustang on Highway 3 near Meriden, Iowa, Friday night when a Cherokee County deputy attempted to stop the vehicle for reckless speeding, according to an Iowa State Patrol crash report. Williams accelerated in an attempt to elude the deputy and turned south on County Road L-51. He continued south on the road at a high rate of speed, driving off the roadway several times before losing control and going off the west side of the roadway at around 10:26 p.m. He was then taken to Cherokee Regional Medical Center but did not survive injuries sustained in the crash. All right, let's turn to the opinion section and let's get some letters to the editor from Siouxland residents. Headline, Woodbury County election workers deserve thanks. The voters of Woodbury County owe a debt of gratitude to those who worked on our behalf with respect to our recent general election. First and foremost, the Woodbury County Auditor's Office, headed by Auditor Pat Gill, administered a record number of absentee ballot requests in addition to early voting and election day voting. The entire office served the people of Woodbury County with professionalism and diligence. We also acknowledge the poll workers. During October, many poll workers worked at the early voting sites. They also put in long hours on November 3rd to be sure that everyone who ventured out had the opportunity to cast a vote. Last and not least are the postal workers who were entrusted with our absentee ballots. In short, now that the election is over, the citizens of Woodbury County can be proud of all our friends and neighbors who work to make the election go smoothly. Signed, Dagna Simmons, Sioux City President, League of Women Voters of Sioux City. Next one is headlined, Georgia Purged Voter Rolls, We Should Do It Too. Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger purged 300,000 voters under a state law that removes residents from the rolls if they don't vote in a 7-year period or respond to contacts. Do other states also do so? Seems reasonable and would eliminate the so-called voting by, quote, dead people. Georgia's new law will give voters 9 years now, which might be fair and would cover 2 presidential elections. Signed, Shirley Stoll of Primgar, Iowa. And then let's do the editorial from the Sioux City Journal editorial board. The title of their editorial says, Sioux City steps up in response to Reynolds' orders. When the governor isn't willing to put some teeth into her mask mandate, it's up to the state's cities to do it. And that's exactly what Sioux City officials did this week when Mayor Bob Scott said police officers would issue citations to individuals and businesses who didn't comply with orders to slow the spread of COVID-19. Granted, those orders are about as clear as mud, but they say it's time to take the virus seriously. Iowa is one of the nation's hotspots and has been for some time, in parentheses, largely because residents have been willing to give up large gatherings for weddings, sporting events, parties, and yes, holidays. State officials like Governor Kim Reynolds haven't been willing either to shut things down to slow the spread. She offered that, quote, there's science on both sides, chestnut, at a news conference last week, but didn't cite the studies that say mask wearing is somehow not helpful. Hers was simply a political ploy to keep naysayers happy. The mandate needed to be sooner and tougher. In 1918, state officials had no qualms about issuing mask mandates, limiting crowds, and closing businesses when an influenza pandemic hit the world. The, quote, get tough stance worked well because people didn't say their rights were being trampled. Our ancestors knew measures had to be taken to stop the spread, and they listened. Now, we're in danger of burdening our hospitals and burning out our healthcare workers. Would you really want to hear, quote, sorry we're full when you need medical help? That's what we risk by carelessly going about our lives. While it's highly unlikely Sioux City police are going to be counting heads sitting at your Thanksgiving table, it's comforting to know that they're not going to let large-scale events unfold unchecked. Like our fireworks ordinances, this call for compliance requires self-policing. And really, how hard is it? You go outside your house, you wear a mask. Even Reynolds' mask mandate may have many holes. Schools should have been part of her strategy. It's something it's also telling that cities like Sioux City have had to take a tough love approach to get residents to comply. Thursday, give thanks that you have city officials who do care, and that we have healthcare workers doing everything they can to make sure the coronavirus isn't the Grim Reaper it could be. Okay, we'll now turn to the obituary section of today's paper. First is Lynn C. Hatcher of Ponca, Nebraska, 83, passed away on November 18th at Elms Healthcare Center in Ponca. Due to the pandemic, a celebration of life will be held at a later date. Moore Funeral Home in Ponca is assisting the family. All condolences go to MeyerBrothersChapels.com. Lynn was born on November 4th, 1937 in Lincoln, Nebraska to Burton Hatcher and Lena Hendricks Hatcher. He graduated from College View High School in Lincoln in 1955. On February 14, 1968, he was united in marriage to Jacqueline Geist in Fremont, Nebraska. The following year, they moved to Ponca. Lynn worked as a locomotive engineer for the Burlington Northern Railroad from 1960 until his retirement in 1999. Lynn was honored to be chosen as the engineer who would drive the very first train across Burlington Northern's newly constructed bridge in Sioux City on December 4, 1981. The bridge spanned the Missouri River, and Lynn was chosen because of his ability to drive the train so smoothly, and they knew he would make it look perfect for all of the media coverage. It was a proud moment for Lynn and his family. Lynn loved to watch the Huskers play football, gardening, birdwatching, golf, and spending time with his family. He loved traveling. They went on many trips with Cancun and Vegas being some of their favorite spots. He enjoyed gambling, and he usually won enough on the blackjack table to make up for what Jacques lost on the slots. It was a fun family joke. Lynn was known for his pleasantness, big smile, and being pretty outgoing. He never met a stranger. Next is Margaret E. McNally of Washington, Illinois, 90, died Thursday, November 19th. Memorial service will be November 23rd at 11 a.m. at St. Thomas the Apostle Catholic Church in Peoria Heights, Illinois. Burial will be at Resurrection Cemetery in Peoria, Dieter's Funeral Home of Washington, Illinois. Melvin V. Hansen of Emerson, Nebraska. Mr. Hansen, 99, went to be with the Lord, whom he served all his life on November 19th. Service will be 10:30 a.m. Tuesday at Morningside Assembly of God with Pastor Paul Malcolmson officiating. A private family burial will be held at a later date. Melvin was born in rural Concord, Nebraska on December 19, 1920, to Gustav and Mabel Anderson Hansen. He attended country school through the eighth grade and graduated from Emerson High School in 1938. He entered marriage with Janice Anderson on June 12, 1954. To this union, there were four children born. Janice passed away in 1998. When he retired from farming at the age of 72, he drove to Alaska on the Alcan Highway. He was blessed with another marriage to Kathy Udall Yoder on October 14, 2017. He did what he loved for his entire life, farming. First farming with horses as a young man, then with his John Deere tractor. Melvin loved to sing and to read. He read the Bible at least 40 times and numerous other religious books. He also did woodworking, having built many items for his home and family. Melvin also volunteered to sheetrock some of the cabins and buildings at the Church Bible Camp near Alexandria, Minnesota. He was blessed to have been an adult Sunday school teacher for over 80 years, continuing his giving deep faith to all. Melvin was also a prayer warrior who prayed every day for all of his friends and family. Next is Bonnie L. Dyer of Sioux City. Ms. Dyer, 75, passed away on Thursday, November 19th at Countryside Healthcare Center. There will be no services. Bonnie was born on June 7th, 1945 to Alonzo Budd and Louise Dyer. She had no siblings and lived in Woodbury County all her life. She was a 1963 graduate of Bronson Junior Senior High School. She worked for several years at Hardee's in Sioux City. She had a love for animals, especially her constant companion of many years, her cat, Little One. Next is Roland J. Calais, C-A-L-A-I-S, of Sioux City. Mr. Ronald J. Frenchy Calais, 96, passed away on Wednesday, November 18th. Private family services will be held. Burial will be at Graceland Park Cemetery. Roland was born the son of Edville and Oceana Gudry Calais on June 24, 1924 in Cut Off, Louisiana. He graduated from Cut Off High School before enlisting in the United States Air Force. He completed his flight schooling in Moorhead, North Dakota. He met the love of his life, Blanche Serrickson, while stationed in Sioux City. They married on April 28, 1945. Roland worked as a switchman for Northwestern Bell Telephone Company for 38 years until his retirement. After retiring, Roland enjoyed traveling to Hawaii, Las Vegas, and Louisiana. He was a tremendous athlete and undefeated amateur boxer while in the Air Force, an avid golfer, and had multiple hobbies including bowling, gardening, and visiting casinos. Roland enjoyed his 5 o'clock cocktails with family and friends. Roland will be missed by many. Next is Doris Dude Nelson of Sioux City, formerly of Oakland, Nebraska. Ms. Doris Dude Nelson, 102, of Sioux City, and formerly of Oakland, Nebraska, passed away on Thursday, November 12th at her home. Private family services were held. Memorials may be directed to the Siouxland Humane Society as well. Dude had a tendency to say, quote, "I came, I saw, I left," and live her life according to that very motto. Next is Timothy Lee Schultz of Sioux City. Mr. Schultz, 64, passed away on Thursday, November 12th at a Sioux City hospital from complications of cancer, not from COVID-19. Private family funeral services will be held Thursday, November 24th at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel, with public visitation from 10 to 11:30 a.m., also at the chapel. Due to the current COVID-19 restrictions, only 15 people will be allowed in the chapel at a time for visitation, and masks are required. The funeral service will be live streamed on YouTube. A private family service will follow at Calvary Cemetery. Timothy was born on November 29, 1955 in Estherville, Iowa, to Bert W. and Virginia Schar Schultz. He passed away just a few days shy of his 65th birthday. Tim enjoyed fishing, boating, playing his guitar, and spending time with his family. Zachary Lee McMahon of Sioux City. Mr. McMahon, 30, of Sioux City, passed away on Sunday, November 15th at a local hospital. A visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Per pandemic restrictions, only 15 people are allowed at a time. Burial with a graveside service will be in Charter Oak, Iowa at a later date. Zach was born on March 30, 1990 in Sioux City to Pablo Munoz and Darcy McMahon. He graduated from East High School and was currently a student at Wayne State College of Wayne, Nebraska. He enjoyed fishing, camping, going to music festivals, movies, listening to Joe Rogan podcasts, and traveling to Mexico. Clarice M. Roeder of Granville, Iowa, 86, died Thursday, November 20th. Service will be December 1st, 10:30 a.m. at St. Joseph Catholic Church, Granville. Burial will be at St. Joseph Catholic Cemetery. Visitation will be November 30th, 4 to 6:30 p.m. at the church and 1 hour prior to the service. Masks are required and social distancing is to be followed. Next, Linda Jean Capers of Sioux City, 62, died Thursday, November 19th. Cremation rites will be accorded. No services are currently planned. Next is Eric C. Grimm of Jefferson, South Dakota. Dr. Eric C. Grimm, 69, of Jefferson, South Dakota, loving husband, father, and world-renowned scientist, passed away suddenly on Sunday, November 15th. A memorial service will take place after the pandemic has passed and it is safer to gather again. In the meantime, raise a glass of IPA in his honor. Eric was born on August 20th, 1951 in Cincinnati, Ohio. He grew up in Rapid City, South Dakota, exploring the geology and plant life of the Black Hills. He was fascinated with science and was an insatiable reader. He became an Eagle Scout and loved earning merit badges. Eric received his PhD in ecology from the University of Minnesota in 1981. In June 21st of 1980, he married Jane Ann Allard. They had one daughter, Maria. In 1988, he moved to Springfield, Illinois, and began his career at the Illinois State Museum as a curator of botany, rising to become the director of sciences in 2013. He helped lead the landscape history program, which contributed to understanding of long-term changes in climate, landforms, ecosystem, and the human-environment interactions, and was the basis for the museum's Natural History Hall. Eric was committed to sharing scientific research with the public. He was a brilliant lecturer and excelled at explaining complex topics in a friendly and understandable way. His lectures on climate change always drew a crowd. He was internationally known and respected for his studies of fossil pollen, pylonology, and research documenting the long-term changes in vegetation and climate. He spent the past 5 years working from his home office in Jefferson, where he enjoyed tending to his vegetable garden, taking walks with Jane at the Adams Homestead and State Nature Preserve, and assisting with the care of his mother-in-law, Pauline Allard. Eric loved spending time outdoors hiking, fishing, and skiing. His friends and family will fondly recall casual walks becoming guided nature tours, with Eric stopping to inspect leaf shapes and cheerily relating the scientific name of every tree and shrub. Thomas Rush of Jackson, Nebraska, 73, died Saturday, November 21st. Services pending at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Jackson, Becker Hunt Funeral Home of South Sioux City. Next is Mary Murray of Salt Lake City, Utah, formerly of Sioux City. Mary Ann Stephen Murray, 86, departed this earth in the early mornings of November 12th of this year in Salt Lake City to the arms of the Lord, leaving behind the health challenges this beautiful woman faced throughout her last 4 years. No funeral services will be held. Mary's ashes will be interred later at Utah Veterans Memorial Park. Mary was born on September 13, 1934 in Sioux City to Otto F. and Anna C. Skinner Steffen. Mary attended parochial school in her early years, graduated from Central High School, and then attended Morningside College, all in Sioux City. William Bill Murray made the best choice of his life to wed Mary in October 1953 in Sioux City. They lived in Sioux City, Lamar's, and Fort Dodge, Iowa, before moving their family to Salt Lake City, Utah in 1965. Bill always wanted Mary at his side, and she was a faithful caregiver, especially during his lengthy illness. They were married for 63 years. Mary and Bill had five children, but lost their daughter, Diane, in infancy. She was a full-time homemaker until her youngest child started grade school. Mary worked for Utah Scientific for 30 years, designing circuit boards. In death, Mary reunited with her parents and brother, and so many others. In lieu of flowers, please consider doing a kind deed for someone or some animal in Mary's honor. Pamela Glover Hoved, that's H-O-V-D-E, of Sioux City. Ms. Hoved, 70, passed away on Thursday, November 19th at a hospital in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. No services will be held at this time. Pamela Glover Hoved was born on March 3rd, 1950 in Sioux City, the daughter of Yorthy. Pamela Glover Hoved was born on March 3rd, 1950 in Sioux City, the daughter of Dorothy Yvonne Miller and Junior Ray Glover. Pam graduated from Western Iowa Tech with an associate's degree in police science. She was a member of the Woodbury County Sheriff's Posse and later worked as a jailer with the Woodbury County Sheriff's Office. She worked at Interbank Foods for over 25 years, retiring in 2020. She loved being with her family. They were her everything. Pam also loved gardening and enjoyed watching movies. The family would like to acknowledge a special thanks to the doctors and staff at Avera McKinnon Healthcare for their compassion and care of Pamela during her time there. Next, Elizabeth Farmer of Sioux City, 73, died Saturday, November 21st. Turning now to the B page sections of the obituaries, we have John A. Ward Jr. Mr. Ward Jr., Pops, as he was known, 67, of Sioux City, passed away on Wednesday, November 18th, surrounded by his family. Services will be 2 p.m. Tuesday at Moore and Becker Hunt Funeral Home in South Sioux City. Visitation will be 6 to 8 p.m. Monday at the funeral home. John was born on November 16, 1953 in Jackson, Mississippi to John Sr. and Lois Ward. The family moved to Sioux City shortly after, making this his permanent home. He graduated in 1972 with the last graduating class of Central High School. While attending high school, he started his working career at Alfredo Pizza, where he was employed for the next 16 years. On June 22, 1974, he married the love of his life, Ricky Lee Benedict, at Sacred Heart Church in Sioux City. From this union, a daughter and a son were born. In 1986, he began his next career as a machinist at Elastomer Engineering, from where he retired at the beginning of this year. John's passion for racing started at a very young age, learning from his dad, to driving his own race car, from pitting for others to passing down his love of racing to his children. He also enjoyed cheering on the Iowa Hawkeyes, playing cribbage, and shooting pool. Next is Randall R. Speckman of Sioux City. Mr. Randall, or Randy as he was sometimes known, 63, passed away on November 20th, surrounded by his family at a local hospital. Service will be 2 p.m. Tuesday at Sunnybrook Church. Private burial will be at Memorial Park Cemetery. Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel is handling the arrangements. Online condolences go to meyerbrotherschapels.com. Randy was born on November 12, 1953 in Sioux City to Raymond and Jeanette Smith Speckman. He was united in marriage to Judy Schmitz on July 21, 1979 in Sioux City. They were blessed with three children. Randy retired as a crew leader for Mid-American after 33 years. He was the kind of person who put everyone before himself and would take time to talk and connect with people he met. Family was especially important to Randy. He had a special bond with each of his grandchildren. He was always there to take them to school and practices and never missed an event. He had a strong faith in God and was a member of Sunnybrook Church, where he volunteered in the Hope Center. He enjoyed spending time with his family, hunting, boating, camping, riding his motorcycle, and traveling. Most importantly, Randy taught his friends and family to be compassionate and kind. Next is Raymond E. Ellerbush, that's E-L-L-E-R-B-U-S-C-H, of Holstein, Iowa. Mr. Ellerbush, 93, was called to his heavenly home to join his parents, brothers, and sister on November 19th. We thank God for gently taking him after a brief battle with pneumonia. He was surrounded with love by his wife and daughters. A private family service will be held at St. Paul Evangelical Lutheran Church in Holstein, with Pastor Bob Lewis officiating. Military rites will be conducted by the American Legion Dessel Smith Post No. 225 of Holstein. The Nicholas D. Jensen Funeral Home in Holstein is in charge of the arrangements. All the condolences go to nicholasjensenfh.com. Raymond was born on October 16, 1927 in Royal, Nebraska to John Paul and Adele Strottenberg Ellerbusch. He started country school in the first grade at the age of 4 and was the only student in his class. Because he was so young, he spent much of the day on his teacher's lap while she taught the older students. Then the older students taught Ray. After the drought in 1936, Ray's family moved to Holstein. His father farmed and raised turkeys for his uncle on the farm that is west of the Casey store today. Ray graduated from Holstein High School in 1945 and shortly thereafter enlisted in the Army because they offered a program that for every month for which he would serve, they would pay for 2 months of college. He was stationed in Sasebo in Fukuoka, Japan. At the time of his discharge, the Army offered a higher rank to all of his company who would reenlist. Ray chose to come back home and farm with his father, only later to find that most of his comrades who had reenlisted were killed in an attack. Ray was very proud to have served his country. He enjoyed these lifelong friendships and the Army reunions throughout the years. He attained the rank of sergeant and was honored to be awarded the Army of Occupation Medal of Japan, Marksmanship Badge, M1 Rifle, World War II Victory Medal, and the Good Conduct Medal. He was honored to be invited into the Dressel Schmidt Post of the American Legion. Raymond always valued higher education, and upon his honorable discharge in 1947, he had hoped to attend college, but he took an opportunity to farm instead. He met his loving bride, Gloria Schmidt of Cushing, Iowa, through mutual friends in 1948, and after they married on March 11, 1951, they moved to the farm Ray had purchased in 1950. They spent the next 55 years of their lives on this farm, located 1 mile north of Cushing, raising their daughters and growing crops and a cattle herd and feeding cattle and hogs. Raymond always had a heart for service and spent 35 years on the Douglas Township Board of Trustees. He also served for the co-op, REC, Kiwanis, and held many positions on his church council. He stayed abreast of the best conservation practices and was one of the first to implement contour farming in the county. He was awarded the Quad State Conservation Achievement Award in 1994. Raymond and Gloria enjoyed life to the fullest. They took many fishing trips with friends to Canada and have enjoyed their card club friends since 1951. They had many travels with their antique cars with the Serapasi Club of Storm Lake and seldom ever missed a dance in the area. Golfing provided many years of fun along with new friendships. Ray and Gloria love to travel and have been to most states, to many European countries, and a cruise to the Panama Canal. They blessed their family by taking them along on trips to the Dominican Republic and various closer destinations. In January of 2019, Ray decided he had another trip left in him and took his family of 33 to Disneyland, where he enjoyed seeing the magic of this place through the eyes of his great-grandchildren. He joined them on many rides, including the 52-foot drop of Splash Mountain twice. Mickey Mouse made the trip very special since he and Ray were, quote, born the same year. More than anything, Ray loved to be with his children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, who always made him feel young again. Ray will be remembered for his deep faith and his kind and gentle ways. He was truly the compass for our family. Next is William J. Trenin, that's T-R-E-I-N-E-N, of Sioux City. Mr. William J., or Bill, as he was sometimes known, 87, of Sioux City, passed away on November 20th, surrounded by his loving family. Services will be 10 a.m. Monday at Holy Cross Parish, Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church, with the Reverend David Heeman officiating. A private family burial service will be at Calvary Cemetery in Ponca, Nebraska. Visitation will be 4 to 8 p.m. today, with a rosary and prayer service at 6:30 p.m. at Chrissy Smith Funeral Homes. Masks and social distancing are required. Bill was born on December 19, 1932 in Lamars, Iowa, the son of Leonard and Sylvia Kramer Trenin. In 1951, he graduated from Lamars Central High School, where he was active in sports, drama, and music. He attended Westmark College before serving in the U.S. Army from 1953 to 1955. Most of his Army duty was spent in Alaska during the Korean conflict. On July 9, 1960, Bill married Jo Ellen Knirl at St. Joseph's Church in Ponca, Nebraska. The couple was blessed with 7 children. He began employment with IPS, or what's now known as Mid-American Energy, in 1955. Before retiring in 1989, he worked in Lamars and Storm Lake, Iowa, Canton and Yankton, South Dakota, and Sioux City. He began as a draftsman and became a gas specialist and an area manager. In each of these communities, Bill was active in his parish and civic responsibilities. Throughout the years, he had become a member of the Knights of Columbus, Chamber of Commerce, Rotary International, Marriage Encounter, and the St. Sierra of Siouxland.
He served on the Board of Trustees for St. Mount Marty College, now University, and in 1965 he was named Young Republican of the Year for the state of South Dakota. When able, he was a faithful volunteer at his parish and at Queen of Peace, Trinity Heights. Bill enjoyed camping, golfing, woodworking, and traveling. He loved attending his children's many school activities. Next is Chris Allen Hackett of Sioux City. Mr. Hackett, 65, passed away on November 19th, surrounded by family following a brief illness. Celebration of life will be held at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Chris was born in Concordia, Kansas on October 3, 1955. Chris graduated from William J. Palmer High School in Colorado Springs, Colorado, before proudly serving his country as a Navy corpsman. He later settled in Sioux City to be near his wife's family. Chris was an avid baseball fan and often scheduled his travel to coincide with professional and minor league games. He was a lover of music, especially the Allman Brothers, Tom Petty, and America. He enjoyed traveling, particularly to Tybee Island, Georgia, where he'd enjoy endless hours in the sand. Chris was a simple man and took pleasure in spending time with his family. He enjoyed having all of his kids together and loved nothing more than sharing experiences and new things with his granddaughters. Chris was a loving husband, father, and grandfather, and he will be greatly missed. Next is Muhammad El Zini. Mr. El Zini, 81, of Dakota Dunes, passed away peacefully on November 20th, surrounded by his family and loved ones. Due to COVID-19, graveside services will be for family only. His life will be celebrated at a later date when all friends and family can gather safely. Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel is handling the arrangements. Beloved husband to Margot, devoted father to Rami, and loving grandfather to Maya Muhammad, was born on March 16, 1939 in Cana, Egypt. The son of Abel Hamid and Inasaf Abdul El Zemi, Muhammad was the oldest of 8 children, and he embraced being a role model and mentor to his siblings and their growing families. Muhammad was the first in his family to attend and graduate from college, and is followed in that endeavor by each of his brothers and sisters, although he was the only one to leave their home country. Muhammad came to the United States in 1962 as one of a select few chosen by his government to pursue a graduate education in the field of economics. After graduating from Cairo University, Muhammad was granted an academic scholarship by the Ministry of Economics to further pursue his studies abroad. Muhammad earned a graduate degrees from the University of Illinois and Indiana University and the University of Wisconsin, a master's in mathematics, economics, and accounting. He then spent his career teaching accounting and economics at the college level, beginning his career at Indiana University, then the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater, followed by several years locally at Western Iowa Tech, where he helped start their accounting specialist program. He was a caring educator who set high standards for his students. He married Margot L. Zini on August 23, 1968, and they enjoyed a blessed and never-boring 50-plus years of marriage. Theirs was a unique partnership. She, the fiery, outspoken feminist and political activist. He, the quiet, even-tempered, calming influence who handled all situations with a logical approach and a steady hand. They balanced each other out and created a strong, interdependent, loving life together. Muhammad was a numbers guy and an analytical thinker. In his free time, he enjoyed spending hours playing chess, backgammon, and a variety of card games with family and friends. In his younger years, he thoroughly enjoyed coaching his son's various sports teams. But most of all, he loved investing and following the markets. After Muhammad took an early retirement in 2000, his new workday started with tea in hand, his laptop fired up, and the TV turned to CNBC for the opening bell. To all who met him, Muhammad was known as a true gentleman. Quiet but quick-witted, with a dry sense of humor and a love of laughter. He was deeply decent and a generous man who will be dearly missed by many. We will all miss his bright eyes, that smile, and his hearty laugh. Next, Sandra Green Montagnani, that's M-O-N-T-I-G-N-A-N-I, of Bedford, Texas, formerly of Sioux City. Sandra Green Montagnani, 73, of Bedford, and formerly of Sioux City, passed away at her home on Tuesday, November 10th. A graveside service will be held at 1 p.m. on Wednesday at Graceland Park Cemetery in Sioux City, under the direction of Waterbury Funeral Service. She was fondly known as Grandma Sandy to her 9 beloved grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren. Next, George Leckband of Sioux City, 75, died Saturday, November 21st. Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City will arrange. Next, Dolores Ann Graham of Sioux City. Dolores D.D. Ann Graham, 89, passed away with her family by her side on Friday, November 20th at our home. Service will be 10 a.m. Wednesday at St. Boniface Catholic Church in Sioux City. Due to COVID concerns, we made the difficult decision that there will be no in-person attendance. A link to which you can watch online will be at MeyerBrothersChapels.com. A celebration of life will be planned in the future. Dolores Ann, the daughter of Felix and Mabel Knight Cusson, was born on March 9, 1963 in Sioux City. At an early age, Dolores' family moved to Council Bluffs for 2 years, then returned to Sioux City. She was a lifelong member of St. Boniface Church, attending the Cathedral of the Epiphany, and was part of its last graduating high school class in 1949. After high school, she worked as a secretary in Sioux City. On December 27, 1952, Dolores was united in marriage to Daryl Jean Graham at St. Boniface Catholic Church in Sioux City. This union was blessed with 4 children, and the family made their home in Sioux City. Dee Dee stayed home while the kids were in school. In 1973, she started working for the City of Sioux City until her retirement. Dee Dee's hobbies included playing the piano, often by ear, going to the casino, crossword puzzles, and getting together to play cards with friends and families. She was an avid baseball fan of the St. Louis Cardinals. Above all, she loved her family dearly and enjoyed spending her time with her grandchildren and great-grandchildren. One of Dee Dee's favorite holidays was St. Patrick's Day, and she proudly celebrated her Irish heritage. She was a devoted Catholic and active with the Carmelite Monastery and Rosary Society in Sioux City. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Gospel Mission in Sioux City or to Feed the Hungry, Clothe the Poor, Shelter the Homeless, Lead Them to Christ. Next is Timothy Lee Bratvold of Lamars, Iowa. Mr. Bratvold, 60, passed away on Friday, November 20th. A private family service will be 11 a.m. Wednesday at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. A public visitation will be 10 to 11 a.m. with a maximum of 15 people in the funeral home at one time. Online condolences, go to MeyerBrothersChapels.com. Tim was born on February 7th, 1960 in Grand Forks, North Dakota, the son of Dwayne and Janice Bratvold. Tim spent his career as a professional truck driver both locally and across the country. Tim was also an avid Minnesota sports fan, following the Vikings and Twins closely. Tim moved to Lamars, which he fondly referred to as Mayberry, in 2004. Tim made many friends through social activities in which he was best known as Tim the Trucker. Next is Roger A. Woodward of Mapleton, Iowa, 69, died Saturday, November 21st, Rush Family Care Service of Onawa, Iowa. Next is Delphine M. Klingensmith of Sioux City, 79, passed away on Thursday, October 29th at her residence comforted by family. Services will be 10:30 a.m. Saturday, November 28th at Matter Dei Parish Church of the Nativity of Jesus Christ with the Reverend Daniel Rupp as celebrant. Burial will follow Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation with the family present will be 1 hour prior to the service at the church. Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel is assisting the family. Online condolences may be offered at MeyerBrothersChapels.com. Next is Carol Ann Foster of Sioux City. Carol Ann Foster, 84, of Sioux City, died Wednesday, November 18th, at a nursing home in Holstein, Iowa. Private family services will be held at a later date. Waterbury Funeral Service is assisting the family with the arrangements. All right, after the 4 pages of obituaries, let's do some Dear Abby quickly. Top of her column, twins are divided over mom's treatment for terminal cancer. Dear Abby, my 63-year-old mother has recently been diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic lung cancer. Even prior to her diagnosis, she was a negative and depressed person. She has been a smoker, drinker, and backseat driver for almost 50 years. She has undergone intense radiation but is refusing to take her chemo pill. In her words, why should she prolong her life by another year, especially if it causes more side effects and won't cure her? My twin or I are her only children. She has no significant life partner and there are no grandkids. While I have kept in steady contact and maintained relations with her even during all our bad trips, my brother has taken an out-of-sight, out-of-mind attitude. We both live a 2 or 3 hour distance away from mom. The problem now is my brother wants her to persevere through all doctor's treatments while I have accepted her decision to essentially let go. How can I help him come to terms with mom's decision, and do you recommend any resources? Signed, son/brother in California. Abby writes,
Dear son slash brother, I firmly believe in a person's right to make their own decision when it comes to continuing or discontinuing treatment for a terminal illness. If your mother feels the chemotherapy has side effects that are too debilitating to tolerate, it should be her choice whether to discontinue them rather than the preference of your brother. If your mother prefers palliative or hospice care, she's entitled to have it, and she should discuss it with her doctor who can see that she receives it. Two excellent books will provide the information that you are seeking and more. Read them and share them with your brother. Both include the topic of physician-assisted aid in dying. The first, entitled, quote, Finish Strong, is written by Barbara Coombs Lee, the founder of Compassion and Choices, an organization which I have been a longtime contributor. For free resources regarding your mom's decision, visit CompassionandChoices.org. For the second book, authored by Diane Rehm, who hosted the Diane Rehm Show on NPR from 1979 to Diane Rehm Show, excuse me, to 2016, is titled When My Time Comes, and will be followed by a documentary to be aired on the spring of 2021 on PBS. Next letter, Dear Abby, I've been happily married for a few years. Prior to being engaged, I had a close friend I had feelings for, but nothing ever came of it. We've remained close and see each other throughout the year at work conferences. He lives in a nearby town. Well, I've realized the feelings I have had for him over the years haven't gone away. Should I tell him how I feel or forever keep my peace? Signed, History Repeating in Alabama. Abby writes, Dear History, history isn't repeating itself. It's the same old story playing in your head. Ask yourself what you have to gain by telling him you still have romantic feelings for him. If the answer is trouble in your happy marriage, then keep your trap shut. All right, and then a quick recap at the weather. Today, we're looking at a high of 48, increasing amounts of sunshine. Tonight, it'll be clear with a low of 24. Monday, it'll be clouds and sun, breezy in the afternoon, winds about 10 to 20 miles per hour, high of 44, low of 38. Tuesday, occasional rain and drizzle, 46 as a high, 28 as a low. Wednesday, clouds and sunshine, high of 46 and low of 28. Thursday, or Thanksgiving, it'll be high of 49, a low of 26, and mostly sunny. All right, that's been the Sioux City Journal for Iris for Sunday, November 22nd, 2020. This has been Trevor Brass bringing you it. I hope you have a wonderful week. Stay safe, stay well. Please wear a mask and do consider your safety and health of others when making Thanksgiving plans. Bye-bye.